It is the 28th of September. This is episode 63 of Digital Outbox. Welcome along to another episode. I'm Chris, and I'm joined again by Ian.
Good evening.
And it's blooming cold. I've had to put my heating on today.
As did I.
My toes were chilly.
That was my fingers.
It was, luckily my heating does still work, so now I'm nice and I guess I'm toasty now.
Oh, I felt sorry. I helped somebody move yesterday and their heating wasn't working last night.
Ouch.
And it was a fairly, nobody's been in it for a week and he's moved into like an old house. And old houses in Glasgow are lovely. It's a lovely house, but it's big rooms. Big
so
high
little
rooms.
Little heater's not going to do a little electric on. Not going to help him out.
Little boiler was blinking away with a I don't work code. So, and it's that time of year. It's just going a little bit chilly.
And you know all the engineers are going to be booked out on everyone else who hasn't got heating working.
I just see you've got somebody old in the house. I've got somebody old. Send them out now.
That's not you. Just drag an old person off the street.
Pretty much.
Love it. Brilliant.
Just give some guy a fiver. Just see what he... I'll meet you. Meet a, like a cup of soup or something.
Right. Well, we got a bit to get through, so let's... Sorry.
That is random.
let's crack on through. And we're gonna start with, Facebook and sex with goats.
And they're obviously linked.
Of course.
It's like an episode of That's Life already. Gone from little old guys to having sex with goats. So Facebook was down last week.
Did you notice?
No.
Nor did I. And nor with anyone else I've spoken to.
It's worst downtime in 4 years. Out for 2.5 hours.
God, if I could have sites that are only down for 2.5 hours when they went down, I'd be happy.
Yeah, but you don't have 500 million users.
And you know, another, you know, near, well, third of a million websites all sort of are relying on you.
I like the way that you took longer to say a third of a million than the 350,000 that was written down.
I was trying to work out what that was.
I'll say something really clever around this number. Numbers confuse people.
You always say don't read it, don't you?
Yeah, so that was the like buttons as well. So it's got a big, obviously got a big impact now. I'm guessing there was a whole load of like gaming and all that was down as well. All these daft games that you used to play, Mafia and Wars and all that nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, and it's funny, nearly everything that I'm doing at the moment is, either partially reliant on or fully reliant on integration with Facebooks and Twitters and, you know, even login flows, all login flows rely on it.
Well, I'm not a big Facebook user, but I have been, see, since we've moved the forum over, I've been on it some more. And even last week, I was actually in one at somebody else's post, I was commenting away, and even Shaq was like, why are you on Facebook? It's just like, what are you doing? And at the end of it, he was like, yeah, it's quite nice to see you around.
Yeah, we found a use for Facebook. Yeah.
And so Facebook was down 2.5 hours and fairly big impact. But I don't know anybody that noticed it at all. Whereas when Twitter goes down, it seems to cause like pandemonium.
I guess it's the instantness of Twitter as well that obviously helps there.
And I'd written down like a comment about it's like a news network. Facebook's about kind of friends and catching up with folk. Whereas Twitter's like news and what's happening now, and it's almost like a bigger group of people you're talking to or you get info from on Twitter.
I have every confidence that there were people getting the cold shakes that Facebook wasn't there for those 2.5 hours and probably pressing, you know, refresh, refresh, refresh. Oh my God. What's happening?
And the whole sex with goats thing was we mentioned last week Twitter had a worm. Well, it was another one. And this time it was putting up basically a link to having sex with goats.
Lovely. You don't click on that one then.
Well.
Enough.
No, I need to stop. I was fixed within the hour, but it had a far bigger impact. And there was a Guardian article as well, just saying, I think, and the guy had basically said, they reckon that downtime on Twitter has a much bigger impact just because it is a lot more, there's a lot more media people. You know, so And there's a lot more celebs, a lot more just people that are very vocal, and they've all got, you know, like 100,000 followers, a million followers, and it's when it goes, it's noticed.
Whereas I'm constantly Facebook, amazed users, how people doesn't. Can post so much onto Twitter. You know, even if it's part of their job, you know, they just seem on it all the time. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of scared. I'm almost up at 3,000 posts. Crikey. But then I see people that are on it, you know, only in a few months, up at like 10,000, just because they're posting all the time. And also they've got an interest in life.
You must miss everything in real life just because you're not looking. You're looking on your little mobile phone. Okay, the next story, we've had a Google, again, another boss sued in another country. So this time in France, being convicted of defamatory statements.
Crazy fact. Well, it's not even crazy. It's just the fact that the guy was actually, he was convicted.
He was.
So
he wasn't a very nice chap, but you know, his actions weren't very nice, let's put it that way.
No. And with the new Google Suggest features, as he typed his name in, against his name, there was the words rapist and Satanist appeared. So he took them to court, and the court found in his favour.
Now, this happened that he was checking, or it probably wasn't even him, it's probably his lawyers, were checking his name. It was before the conviction.
No, I think it will be him.
It was before the conviction happened.
The reason I'm saying it will be him, because you get little neds up here that have got better internet access in a jail than they have outside, and they're getting it for free.
But this was before. Anyway. So this was before his conviction. So that was what the complaint was about, was the fact that before his conviction, these things were appearing in the search listings. Anyway, so the court did rule that yes, that was defamatory. They did only have to pay a symbolic amount of, I think it was a euro,
5,000 euros.
That was court costs.
Oh, so. To the cost, yeah, yes. Yeah.
So anyway, Google are appealing it.
Go Google.
Course. So we'll see what comes out there. They're saying, you know, it's just the search is nothing to do with them. They're not making the statements.
No,
it's just the
And that's all it is. It's their algorithms that are looking at the content online and working out what makes sense.
So, yes,
so because lots of other people have called them a Satanist and a rapist.
And they could have said allegedly in front of all those, you know, so it's just that Google's obviously missed that off. But, it just doesn't take into account what this search is. It's not Google saying these things, is it? So it seems like, again, it's not a particularly wise future-looking
It's also crazy lawyers. You know, just what a waste of time this is. And then again, maybe if I was getting called a rapist, maybe I'd
yeah, exactly. You might be quite annoyed.
But I'm not, and I haven't.
So again, the only person that made any money out of this was the lawyers again. Remember, kids, get into law.
Yeah.
Get into
Sex
law
with goats.
And get employed by ACS law. Won't last very long.
Oh, I love this.
So this ACS law, if listeners will remember, is the firm that kept sending out letters to people on behalf of certain entertainment companies, shall we say, saying that they'd copied. And distributed illegal copyrighted material on file sharing networks. And they didn't actually ask for any proof. They just asked for an amount of money. And basically it was pretty ugly. And they said it was just wide sweeping letters going out.
And if you remember, it was wide sweeping letters. And in some cases, I think people were paying up. In other cases, people were paying up because they were guilty.
Now,
or because they didn't want the shame. In other cases,
these are embarrassing
like,
videos, potentially, aren't they?
Yeah. In other cases, it was just, well, you can't prove it. You know, and there was just no actual hard proof that it was that person that had done it. And I think that was a kind of controversy around the whole thing. Anyway, 4chan, which are if you go on 4chan's website, it's a place for everything. So you have been warned if you go there. And they are pretty famous for, you know, targeting, you know, once their community decides to target something, they will win. So I think Times Man of the Decade was actually the leader or the guy that set up 4chan. And if you look at how bad they were able to game that particular vote, I think they spelt out a message with the number 1 to 20 people. That's how much kind of power they have. So they decided that ACS law, it was time to take their website down. So they did a DDoS attack on it. Even worse, So when the website went down, I guess ACS Law got in touch with whoever, you know, does all their hosting, etc. Now we're down, you need to get it back up and running. Now, the guys at 4chan have then said that when they visited the website, the actual, and I guess whoever's hosting is also doing all their emails, etc. They basically put up a tar file of all the web content plus passwords.
Oh dear.
A whole load of stuff.
They'd use that to put it back onto the server, I imagine. Yep. Ready to rebuild it.
Yep. But it was live, it was open, and anybody could download it. And it was unencrypted.
No HD access file to stop people doing it.
Yeah, no. So very quickly that was downloaded. What's not clear was whether that included the 500 meg email file that is now on every torrent site known to man and has been out there and shared. But it's on Pirate Bay. It's on the news group, so that's not going to go away anytime fast either.
Now,
if I just finish off this bit, there's a kind of ugly side to this as well, because out of that, they then found his mobile phone number. So the guy that run it's a guy called Andrew Crosley, found his mobile number, his home number. So he was harassed at home, middle of the night, prank phone calls. I'm guessing he must have got hundreds.
As soon as the phone number's out there, and if you're on that kind of community, everyone's going to try it just for a bit of a laugh as much.
You're just going to get pummeled, absolutely pummeled. And that was the kind of first bit of it, that everybody thought it's a DDoS attack, and yeah, that takes them down, and you're screwing with the wrong kind of people. But then come out of it was this email, this 500 minute, and it is all their email archive, as from what I've read online, you can see everything, you know, passwords and all sorts of nonsense. Worse was they actually found unprotected Excel files from Sky and BT Plusnet, and it included files that people had downloaded files, and their IP address, the time they downloaded them, plus their full name, plus their full address.
So this will be ACS Law having been told by their entertainment firms who they wanted to know about.
So the entertainment firms,
they've requested that information from BT and Plusnet, and
yep, and the entertainment firms from what I've read online today are a mixture of adult entertainment plus also music industry.
Yep,
and it's at their request. Now, from what I can piece together this morning, because I was doing a lot of scurrying around, the Sky ones are unprotected. And Sky have actually responded to this and saying they're concerned about these leaks.
But they weren't that concerned that they sent an email with an unprotected, XLS file.
From what I can read, nobody knows whether it was Sky sent the email or whether it was internally ACS Law were sending around an unencrypted email, an unencrypted XLS file. So that bit's not clear. But certainly there was on Saturday or Sunday, it was 5,000. It was 5,000 Sky customers in one file. And then today, it was on BBC, they've said there's another 8,000 Sky customer details flying around. And the details look, you know, I saw a screenshot of the Excel. It's everything's there. You know, so, and I guess, it's such a breach of confidentiality.
Yeah, I mean to be fair, if you're inside a company, you probably zip round pieces of information all the time that probably should be encrypted.
I am always think about the Data Protection Act when it comes to people's data.
Yes, so as do I.
Well, I'm being serious. We do, actually. So
okay, I imagine there's definitely stuff flying around. However, the stuff that's flying around is not going to be 5,000 user records.
And it's not going to be 5,000 user records against some porn files that they've downloaded.
No, with their IP address, and so you pretty much know everything you need to know about.
And also, there is no proof that it was them. All I think it can be is you've got this file, here's the IP address, and there's the customer details, but you have no clue whether it was that person themselves.
What
if I was running a hotel? What if I run a hotel or a pub and somebody's downloaded it?
Sure.
So why is my name, you know, potentially associated with that file now?
But my problem with all of this is the fact that the whole point of going after ACS Law by this 4chan in the first place was to protect people, well, to say don't dig into people's privacy and use it. But now all that information that we already discussed, we think is inaccurate or, you know, it does contain all that personal information, is now just being widely distributed everywhere on the internet for anyone to see.
So the problem you've got, you can jump on Pirate Bay today, and you could have downloaded what was all the original files that the 4chan guys had got. But then there were separate torrents with here are the Excel files from Sky, BT, Plusnet, and O2. And you've no way of verifying it.
More unscrupulous firms even than ACS Law who now have full access to that information, no questions asked.
Oh, no, absolutely. But it's worse. I mean, I could have put your name in that I'll put it up on a torrent site.
Exactly. But you know that the first people that are going to go and grab files like that are people who pry on this kind of information to store into their databases.
Exactly.
So that's where I have an issue with this. Is not that 4chan, I mean, I don't feel sorry for ACS Law. I detest what they stand for. But you know, they...
In some ways, it's not so much to test what they stand for. It's the way that it's.
Sorry, yes, I should clarify that. It's the way they've done it.
Yeah,
I don't detest what they stand for, but that they just don't come across as the kind of firm that's out there for the greater good, really.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking it up just now. I mean, Torrent Freak did. So they've obviously, or they've got members that actually went and looked at the file, and. They posted up over the weekend, I think it was. Yeah, Sunday. High profile, high damages file sharing conviction was a farce. So they were looking through, they've obviously been looking through the emails that they've grabbed off this site. And they've actually, one of their lawyers actually debunks it and says the case was very, very, very thin.
So yeah, so they're even.
You know, so their own legal firm realised that, and at one point they actually. I'm just on the site here, just in case they say, because of all these factors, I believe that it would be extremely difficult to establish with any accuracy that it had been a sharing, except with the monitoring system, which is an action by the infringer for which no damages can be accrued. So even, you know, one of their legal team don't think they can get any damages, but they were on to win the case, and I think they got, it was £16,000 in damages.
Well, maybe
for sharing,
that person can find that.
For sharing one game. It was a game called Dream Pinball 3D. So
he's going to be gutted that you spent 16 grand on that.
Yeah.
No, I just think if I was criminally minded, I'd go and grab this thing because now I've got a lever on, you know, however many thousand people. I've got their address. I can go and knock on their door and I can go and basically get money out of them.
And it's not just Sky that have handed over the details. And I think because they've been legally told to do it, they are having to go.
I'm
with
sure they're required
legally.
To do it. I'm sure they are.
So BT and Plusnet, they've handed over the same details. And I think the difference maybe with the Sky one, which is unverified whether it was sent unprotected, the BT and Plusnet ones have been verified that they were sent unprotected. Mm. The copy of the email actually said on it, please treat this securely. And it's like, well done for sending it out in an unprotected XLS file.
So there's a lot of mess going on here from all sides. And all because, you know, the entertainment industry is ruling at the moment.
Yep.
Basically.
O2, they've sent it over, but there was no actual data. All it was an IP address and the name of the file and the time.
This is a messy affair.
There was more O2 and B, actually, I found. I'm just looking at my notes. O2 and B customers, it was an XLS, but it was password protected as well. So it was slightly more secure.
I'm not sure. I don't know how secure password protecting it. Does it encrypt the contents or does it just stop you getting access? Can you go?
It stops you getting access. And also, it then depends on how secure the password is. You know, if you've just used
that. But can you get
into
the raw bytes and have a look through? That's what I'm getting at.
I have no idea. My skills are poor.
No, I don't know either.
You know, I wouldn't know. All I know is it's that if you look at some of the tools out there, a lot of them just use, like, you know, dictionary brute force type attacks.
Yeah.
So if you've used a common word or whatever, good chances it'll be hacked fairly quickly. If they've used a whole load of combination of, you know, words, letters, symbols, I think that is far more difficult.
Yes, well, that's just...
And maybe I'm wrong, but there's a tool there that will just strip it off, because I know there was a whole load of Adobe PDF tools that can just be, you know, you can just strip it off. And the
yeah,
PDF
it depends whether that
open.
Password's directly used for the encryption. I'd say I don't know. So
and we don't know enough. BBC finally picked up today, and Information Commissioner is actually going to look into it. He's just concerned at the leak of the data, but also how the data has been handled by ACS Law themselves.
And this is a law firm that should know a lot better.
Yes.
So is there going to be an outcome of? I mean, I've heard rumours that you know they're thinking, you know, they could fine this ACS Law.
The most Information Commissioner said today is that he can't shut the firm down, but he can fine them up to 500,000, which he's admitted himself will probably put them in grave financial peril. Seemingly, the firm is not well liked in the legal community.
No, I think other legal firms have come out and said they just don't like the way they conduct themselves.
No. And I guess I'd put some thoughts at the end of my long and laborious notes, which thankfully we've not all read out. But obviously ACS don't give a toss about security. They're just there for the money. I guess BT and Plusnet have maybe got a question to answer. Just why somebody in their team feels content, you know, emailing that kind of information out without protecting it.
Yeah, and I wonder how much checking goes on about, you know,
as you said, I mean, from a fraud ID point of view, you know, never mind the fact that somebody's been, whether they've downloaded it or not, the fact that the names and addresses are all out there now with an IP address.
You have to rifle through a lot of bins to go and get 8,000 names and addresses tied together.
I mean, you're talking about, you know, you're almost at 20,000 names have been leaked in this one email file, basically. And also, I mean, it's we've said it before that, the, you know, they're sending out letters to people who haven't done anything. And there's people doing it, you know, there are people that are absolutely hammering, you know, and downloading illegal all the time, and they'll never get caught. You know, so it's just not fair.
Nope.
Just not fair. So it'll be interesting to see how this turns out. And ACS, I don't think I've said anything since this has happened. I don't think they've done a statement or anything.
Struck dumb.
Yes. Makes a change.
People who are changing where they're having to say things. Oh, did you like that one? Windows Live Space is now being moved across to WordPress.com. So if you are a Windows Live Space user, get ready to migrate to WordPress.
I was kind of surprised by this.
Yeah, totally.
In fact, it was last night in between our Halo games. I read out the tweet and I was like, wow.
Yeah.
So... basically, I've never used Windows Live Spaces, so I don't know if they're good, bad, or indifferent.
I think it was all rolled into their live service, wasn't it? And it was an easy thing to sign up if you had a Hotmail account or whatever. But
they reckon they've got 30 million blocks.
And that's what I thought WordPress was the biggest by far out there. But actually, they reckon there's 14 million WordPress blogs and 30 million live space. Like, again, it depends what you mean by a blog, really, doesn't it?
Well, you know, because I've got a couple of WordPress.com blogs that I'm never actually blogging on them. I had a couple of ideas and they just never took off.
Yep.
And that probably counts as 2 of the 14 million.
And I've got about 12 Twitter accounts and 12 Facebook developer accounts. I've got loads of accounts, but none of them I get used. So it's the same kind of thing.
And I'm wondering if it's the same with the live spaces.
Yeah, you know, I think it is.
When they tout a number of 30 million blogs, it just sounds incredible.
I just wonder whether that's just 30 million Hotmail users that have access to a live space.
Yeah, and that's what I think it is. But anyway, even if it turns out to be 1 million or 2 million users, I guess it's more the statement of intent for Microsoft. You know, instead of trying to develop or improve their own platform, they are phasing out their blogging service. And from today, if you're a Windows Live Space user, you'll have a window showing you how to migrate. They've done a special utility to migrate the data over from Windows Live Spaces to WordPress.com.
So there's two things I think about this. So one is, yes, it feels like almost this is alien territory for Microsoft. This is them pretty much coming out and saying, well, WordPress is better than Live Spaces, so why bother, pretty much. So that flies in the face of everything they've sort of done up till now. And maybe it's showing a change of philosophy inside the company. I don't really know. Do you think this could be the start of them looking at things differently?
Well, we were talking about this last night and how, you know, Microsoft, although they still make the most money, they still make most profit, you know, Windows 7, you know, Office apps, that's almost like a cornerstone. They're never going to, I still think in the next sort of 3 to 5 years, I can't see anybody denting their market share in those areas because nothing seems to be here now. But 5 years is a long time.
And lots, lot, you know, you, 5 years ago, if you take the landscape now and the landscape 5 years ago, you'd be probably shocked.
Totally different.
Shocked at what it was.
But
like.
Then I guess almost back, I mean, I think you'd said it last night, just they're in a like, total malaise, you know, just almost like, you know, rudderless. You know, they're not leading, they're not innovating, they're not. You know,
they're not giving their constant, we used to see all the time, their constant vision.
No.
And we haven't seen that. And again, maybe it's just because internally they're doing different things and they're going about things differently and are going to come out with something. But there's no sign of that. They just seem to be retreating into themselves.
No, I mean, innovation issue, I guess, is Kinect, which is debatable, you know, how innovative that really is. And then you've got Windows Phone 7
and gaming division,
catch-up.
I don't think, comes into. I think the gaming division is probably the one that seems still most current and lively.
Oh, and I think I'm just talking about the thing as an overall. I mean, if they get upstage next year in CES, I mean, last year they talked about Kinect coming, and they talked about we've got Slate devices plus we've got all these great Windows machines, and here's Windows Phone 7. And Phone 7 still looks more of a catch-up than anything else. And I've sent you a link just now, just so you can have a look at the website.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it was a graph just talking about, the, you know, year-to-date, 2010, how many mergers and acquisitions have been made by, the big tech companies. And you've got Google, and I couldn't believe this, but Google are in 23 companies that they've either, you know, basically acquired this year. IBM 12, HP 7, Facebook 6. The one I thought I'd actually done more was Oracle, because Oracle every year buys loads of products.
I think that buying Sun, though, cost them a lot of money, didn't it? So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, some of them are like, you know, multi-billion pound acquisitions they make. But Oracle's, if you look at Oracle's, you know, they've almost got a real problem now because a lot of the products they've bought are all overlapping. You know, so I'm dealing with Oracle, we'll talk to them and say, well, what's your recommendation for this particular market? And they'll give me two or three options.
And no one likes Oracle at the moment anyway, because the way they're dealing with Sun.
Well.
You can't say that. I can.
No, it's well, I just find them very confusing at the moment. I want a clear strategy from where they're going, and even their, you know, even some of their main guys in the UK can't seem to give us it. You know, it's always like, well, you know, but when we'll acquire something else, they say as a joke at the end of the presentation. And you're just like, well, that's not very good. Apple's got 5, and then there's a few others, but Microsoft have got none. They have bought nothing this year.
I guess we're seeing them move quite quickly in the web kind of arena. So we've seen Bing come out of nothing pretty much to being, and their latest HTML5 version, which I guess they're going to release at some point, is looking pretty special.
Yeah, Bing's been the biggest change. I mean, Windows 7 was a good change last year as well, wasn't it? But
well, I think then the Internet Explorer 9 is also going to be a pretty decent release. Okay, it's a catch up, but at least they are caught up.
And I think that is the kind of company they are now, a big behemoth that is just constantly going to be in catch up.
Which is a shame because some of their best things have come out of them innovating. I mean, come back to the games industry. They moved that on a long way just with their release.
The whole online, certainly from a console perspective, was thanks to them.
So, anyway, my other point I wanted to make about blogs is the fact that data inside your blog is only one half of what things are. The way it displays and how you display your blog is the other half. And I can't believe there's going to be tools that replicate that inside WordPress. So that was my only other point about this enforced migration. You know, people spend a long time making their blog look like they want it to look.
No, definitely.
I think
plugins is going to be covered because they have got loads of plugins with WordPress now. I think what it's going to come down to is the themes. You know, a lot of people are probably going to be missing something they used to use in Windows Live Spaces.
Get up to scratch with your development skills on WordPress and you might have a few jobs coming your way.
Indeed. Was that you doing a plug?
I don't know. Was it?
I don't know. How's your WordPress?
Like I'm telling people to get into law, I'm also saying go and learn WordPress themes. Okay, we have had Kindle announce or release their web reader.
Yep. So you don't need to have Kindle on a desktop. You can, basically it's Kindle for the web. You can preview books without any software, change font sizes, line spaces, etc. It's not using Flash, and you can embed free chapters on your website.
Say it's more going to this direction. Is it just easier for people to develop on the web now? I think it is. I think there's some good tools out there, aren't there, that people can actually make proper applications now. And obviously HTML5 and all that kind of business.
I actually played with a Kindle last week, and it was lovely.
Was it?
Oh, it's very nice.
So the new style one?
Yeah, you didn't expect me to say that, did you?
No. It's quite a shock, really.
See if they'd come out with that. See if that was the first version and it had come out 2 years ago. I think so many people would have a Kindle right now. On a plane, I think you'd have half the people on a plane with a Kindle.
But do you not still see it as a compelling device, even though, you know, I say price is massively different compared to your iPads that are going around?
Oh, no, I still do. All I'm saying is I think it would have been a done deal now. I think it's still going to take a bit of time. And
I still think it's going to be a done deal. I think it's in perfect present territory.
I think eventually. It's but very, very slick. Just the whole weight, you know, how clear the screen was as well. And I just thought, see if you don't need it on the road, £110 is just like a bargain.
It's like cost of a scale.
Yeah. All I'll say about my scales is obviously this podcast is an influential podcast. As I know somebody who listened to the podcast who then bought a set of those same scales.
They were that excited by them. The geek in them just got...
Exactly.
Like giggled like a little girl and then went and bought it.
In fact, I should drop an email off and maybe we'll get a sponsor.
We should. At least sign us up as a reseller.
we could rebrand ourselves as Fat Geeks. And
brilliant, love it. Quite like it. Let's trademark that. So talking of sort of portable devices, BlackBerry have put forward their play inside the tablet market.
Their play.
It's not going to be called the BlackPad. It is going to be called the Playbook. BlackBerry Playbook, which they had a big, long developer conference keynote about. Was it yesterday? I think it was.
I have no idea because I didn't watch it. I didn't watch it.
I have since seen sort of the videos of it in action and their kind of presentation of it. It looks like a really decent offering.
No, it does. I mean, I guess it's got everything. It's got everything you'd probably need on a tablet.
So it's a bespoke operating system built by RIM, I guess.
And I guess if you watch the 2 minute advert, it's proper multitasking, it's flash playing. They also said it's uncompromised browsing, which was a bit like... Ugh.
Well, I guess that just means it's got flash player in it. That's what they're saying, isn't it? HTML5
yeah, but the thing
basis.
That everybody's always said has issues with flash is things like, well, there's a lot of games where you need a mouse input and it's not going to watch on a touchscreen. So is that not a compromise? Anyway, I am nitpicking.
So it's a 7-inch tablet. It is due out in early 2011, probably a bit later for the rest of the world. It's got a dual-core processor, so that's pretty impressive to fit into that tablet. It's got two cameras. It's got a camera front and back, both in multi-megapixels. HDMI out, and it can feed two displays if it needs to.
And also the HDMI out will support 1080p as well.
And this, I would like to see that trying to feed two big displays because...
Well, they never said it could display two 1080p.
It's only got a gig of RAM, I think.
But hold on. They've said it can do dual displays and it can do 1080p. That doesn't mean it can do dual 1080p displays.
I'd be interested to see even whether, because even, you know, netbooks say they can do, proper 1080p out.
It is a bold
claim. And they chug. So we'll wait and see. But anyway, it's quite powerful. I don't know whether it's the genuine look of their operating system, but it looks quite slick, properly touch integrated. But the big question mark, no prices.
No prices at all.
Want to make a prediction?
I know Samsung have been kind of playing around with what their tab prices are, and they all seem to be the same price as the iPad. I think it'll be the same price.
I think it's going to be 800-900 quid.
I get the only interesting thing is like there's been a lot of talk about Apple doing a 7-inch tablet, and then them denying it, and people still say in the background it's in development. You know, and Samsung's got a 7-inch coming out, and this is now the BlackBerry Playbook coming out in its 7-inch. I did see an interesting post today that said the reason they're bringing out 7 inches is they can't get the screens any bigger because Apple's buying them all up for the iPad. I don't know whether that was just somebody putting two and two together or whether they actually have the info to say there is a shortage, because that was one of the issues with the iPads early on. They couldn't get enough screens.
Maybe there's
a glut of this screen size. I don't know.
They're not releasing this as a... it's Wi-Fi only as far as I can gather. But
no, it's... Well, they said they will... Going forward, they will be supporting 3 and 4G networks.
Okay, so that'll be in the future. But to start with, it's only Wi-Fi. But it's due to tether with your handset. So again, they're definitely going after the business market here as far as if you've already got a BlackBerry phone with your, you know, all your corporate standard, you know, syncing with, you know, that kind of stuff, you can then tie it straight to this pad and it can immediately become a productivity.
But also the play for them is so many, you know, large industries do have, you know, BlackBerry infrastructure now.
Exactly.
So this will probably just play along with it nicely. They'll probably get security accreditation far easier.
Doing very well for their products, which are widely regarded as not the best or most innovative products, but they're still doing very well because they have concentrated on the on corporate infrastructure.
Yes.
So I think they've got a unique selling point, and I can see it working well. And I say the actual the interface looked good. So
only slight flaw. They're probably going to be competing with the next version of the iPad.
Yes, so the timing of that is probably about the same time.
iPad 2 is probably going to be getting kicked around January, February next year.
Right, I think you're right. At least announced then.
Oh. That was a shiver from my credit card. It was like, oh. I'm sure I said I wouldn't buy next year's one already.
And you would be adding to Apple's ever-increasing... whopping great profit.
I couldn't believe this.
Behemoth that they are in the industry. So mobile phone industry. So they're pulling in. I mean, they're selling, you know, single figure percentages numbers of handsets. I think that's right, of the total sale.
Oh, no, they're selling 17 million mobile handsets compared to Nokia and Samsung and LG selling 400 million handsets.
So a tiny number of handsets.
Yeah, so a lot of the stats we've seen before is they'll break it down into smartphones. So they'll say it's a smartphone and that's why they've got 30% market share. But just looking at handsets, it's tiny compared to other ones.
Yet, when you look at the amount of profit being swallowed up by each of the firms, Apple has about a third of the entire profit. I think, in fact, it says here 40% pretty much of the entire profit of the industry. More than the next three biggest firms combined, their share combined, they're making a killing.
They are, and it's nothing more to be said. They are, are making. I think they came out first with a desirable product.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say they clearly just have their finger on the pulse as far as what's going to make them money, and they've got a lot of obviously dedicated followers, but that you. It takes a lot more than just dedicated followers to make them that much money.
Oh, no,
I mean, my only concern with it, as I've said all the time, profit is everything that a company gets beyond the cost of them producing something. So we're getting fleeced, pretty much.
Well, are we getting fleeced?
I think they said that they make 50%.
Generally, you're seeing, when you see the teardowns and they say this is how much it costs, but at the same time, you're getting everybody raves about going into an Apple store and the kind of, you know, experience you get there. And certainly when I use the products. I'm just after telling you I've had my iMac now for 4 years.
Yeah, yeah. But profit's, you know, everything beyond what it costs to put that together for them.
Oh, no, I know that. But I'm saying is if I look at the price I'm paying, I still think I'm getting value for money.
Yeah, well, and that's it. They're adding this non-material value that people clearly
rate. But I don't think it is non-material. You know, from my point, if I go and some of the other products are out there.
If the cost of something is
that's not what I mean. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if I go and buy something that's cheaper, it doesn't necessarily mean I'm getting as much pleasure out of it. I'm not getting as good a product. I'm not getting as good buying experience. I'm not getting, you know what I mean? That's what I'm trying to say.
I think that's probably what I'm saying as well. Okay, anyway. Apple TV. So they did initially say that they couldn't get it out on time. Well, they didn't get it out on time.
Well, I kind of missed all that. I don't understand that. I saw things saying it was 3 weeks late, and then people are tweeting up today saying, oh, mine's is shipped. And I'm like, I don't know if that's late or not. Who cares?
Well, I think it's from the date they initially announced at the conference.
I don't know. I can't remember.
And there's been a lot of talk about, you know, they made that announcement to make sure they got ahead of the Roku box announcement and Boxy box and things like that. So there were delays beyond where they said they would initially start shipping, as I understand it. But obviously now you're getting reports in that.
Yeah, people are saying it's now been shipped. It should have it in their hands for September 30th. And I guess the most interesting thing today was if you go to iPhone Dev Blog, they have a new version of a tool called Shattered, and they've been hacking the iPod Touch, the newest version. But Apple actually uploaded the firmware for the Apple TV. So it's downloadable just now. And it is a version of iOS 4.1. So it is an iOS device. So straight away, I just think next year they'll just bring an App Store out. Just to me, it's like a done deal once.
I think we said this before. I don't know how you can have an App Store for it when there's nowhere to store applications locally.
Big cloud servers are building. Anyway.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
So already they've run a Shattered tool against the firmware, and its keys have been decrypted. They can basically jailbreak it.
So iOS 4.1, before it's even touched anything, can be jailbroken.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see it getting quicker and quicker and quicker until they fundamentally change the way that they put their operating system together, which they're not going to do for a while.
And I also wonder how does the Apple TV do firmware updates? Does it just do it on the fly? So will it know it's not the right version and just download a new version?
I guess it's going to have to. I don't know. It's going to sync with your iTunes still, I imagine. So it's still going to have that link to iTunes because it has to be able to pull content from it. And then I'm sure it'll just flash the BIOS, whatever it is that it stores it on.
Still not tempted. I'm still not tempted. If I had an App Store, I would be. But
no, there's other
tempted
boxes out there that are far more compelling.
Yeah, the Roku box looks really nice.
We're just not going to get it over here, are we?
No.
Because the box is all, you know, it's much of a muchness, these boxes. It's just the services that you can tie in and how flexible they are.
Yeah, they're all just tiny boxes.
They're just boxes with a display out, you know, and a streaming technology that can, a bit of processing. iEducation. Have you trademarked that?
No, but
you should do.
Yeah, that's my sheer bit of genius today. And it's a combination of two stories. One slightly old that I kept on meaning to put in and never got in the show notes because it was either too busy or it just never felt the right time. But on BBC today they're talking about how universities at Leeds are basically handing out iPhones to their students. So I think it was to all fourth and fifth year medical students and getting given iPhones. And it'll provide students with reference material and prescription guidelines. So this is seemingly a first for UK medical schools. And it'll also be allows them to keep in. Well, I'm sure there'll be some deal, and I think they actually have to return them when they finish. There'll be some deal with Apple. There'll be some deal with Apple.
I lost it down the pub.
I've never heard a doctor talk like that.
Oh, you know, it's an open tool now. Oh, my goodness.
What?
I don't know. We're 45 minutes into this podcast. I'm just getting tired.
Oh, bless. So, and I thought it was quite interesting. That same clue in the first. The one that I actually meant to add in was a school up in Scotland, Cedar School of Excellence. Now, the guy that's kind of like head of IT at that school is a guy called Fraser Spears, who is actually an iPhone and Mac developer.
It's a fantastic Scottish name.
And what? he'd blogged back in sort of like January, February, March time that the school was thinking about actually supplying the kids with iPod Touches just for some training material and educational material. But there was some battery issues and how it syncs and some, you know, actually just issues with the device itself. And it meant it wasn't perfect. And then when the iPads got announced, they decided to go for it. So every child got an iPad.
I can't believe they're giving these devices out to kids.
They had to sign an agreement so that if they damage them or whatever, you know, obviously the parents will have to pay some money. I think it was about 70 or 80% of them, parents signed it. And
well, yeah, because imagine the grief they'd have got if they'd not signed it.
But I guess it's the interesting thing is more the actual impact it's had in the school and how they're using it. You know, just the amount of engagement they've got, and they're setting homework assignments and finding kids are doing the homework, you know, far more timely and far more, you know, they're actually getting more out of it than they were.
I wonder whether it's a bit of a honeymoon period that they're just don't
sure
realise that, you know, it's still homework at the end of the day, even though they're using it on the iPad. But that's the exact vision that Microsoft used to have.
Absolutely. Bill Gates stood up and talked about the... Yeah. Bill Gates was the first guy I saw talking about this vision of tablets, and he had his tablet device there, but they never got it out into a device that actually made sense.
Because it wasn't for the moment. It was thinking too far ahead, probably.
Thinking too far ahead, and I think also at the time, the technology couldn't match his vision.
No, exactly. And yeah, it's only just being able to do the stuff that we want it to do. So,
you know, it's not just a touch interface, it's actually getting it on the device that is. I mean, a lot of people would pick up the iPad I've got, so, oh, it's a lot heavier than I thought. They've still got this thing in their head that it's heavy. You know, so if you've got a pad and an iPad all day, it is a weight. So what had come out of that was, you know, that student engagement is vastly improved, working out how it affects attainment will take time. And even though they're not teaching new subjects, they're teaching it a new way. And what he's found is it makes sense to the kids. They deal with information electronically, and they're using a medium now that actually they understand and suits them.
And is a bit more time, you know, time is timeless almost. It doesn't force you into learning at a particular time, does it? You can do your homework whenever, really.
Yeah. I don't know. So it's I just thought, and it's one I meant to put in because he's obviously the school year started. I think it was about 3-4 weeks ago it started up here.
I can only see this happening unfortunately in pretty well off schools or schools with good funding because of, you know, they've got,
and this is a fairly small school. Like, I mean, I think we're talking about there's 120 kids.
So the outlay is not like having a school with 2,000 kids in it. You know, it's nothing like that. And I think they can be sure that probably their parents can afford it if they damage it, whatever.
It was working out at £14 a month per child. It's costing, but they reckon that the payoff is way ahead of that. And seemingly in education terms, if you look at the cost of other things when you work it out that way, it's actually not a big cost.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know.
No.
But anyway, interesting to see times are changing.
Xmarks have said they're going to close. So Xmarks is the cross-browser, cross-operating system way of syncing bookmarks. And pretty much they've come forward and said, well, over these last however many, I think it's 4 years or so they've been around, they've been trying to find ways of supporting themselves monetary-wise, and free services that have come along since have meant that they cannot do that anymore. So they're going to close.
And I kind of woke up to this news this morning and I was really hacked off, actually, because I use it and I rely on it and it works so well for me. I'm cross-platform, I'm cross-browser. And just not having to think about where I've saved a bookmark and having it everywhere is just great. In fact, I don't have it everywhere. I actually have two, because you can do a really clever thing. You can set up profiles. So I've got a work profile and a home profile. And there's ones I can share with both. There's ones I can keep. So, you know, if I've got a site that I don't want, you know, to see on my work browser, it won't be there.
I wonder, they're saying they're going to close in sort of 90 days. And I just wondered whether this was almost putting pressure on a buyer.
There was rumours
to sign on the dotted line.
So from the blog post today, there was rumours today that Google were in negotiations with them, but it looks like that's now fell through. They've got 2 million users across 5 million desktops. And I guess
2 million users is a lot of users. That's worth a lot of money to certain people.
Yep. And at the same time, I mean, I would pay for this. I mean, I pay for Flickr because I think I get, you know, I could host all my photos up in, you know, on Picasa or Facebook, and it wouldn't cost me a thing. I pay for Flickr because I like the things I get out of Flickr, and it's the same with this. This is easily I'd pay $10 a year,
and that's the kind of price you're thinking about. And that surely, I mean, they're saying they can't do that, or they're saying they don't want to do that because they believe that will just mean that all their users go away because they can get free options. But as you said,
you can't get free options.
I use Flickr as well. I use Flickr for the same reasons, and I pay for it.
Yeah.
Because it's not a big cost, and it's just easy. But
the bit that hacked me off about this, and they've done it their own, they've got their own FAQ, and they've obviously, it's not a knee-jerk, it's not an overnight thing. It's not like the owners just slapped up a post and said, that's it, we're shutting. Because they've got a whole lot of information there about what's going to happen and how they're going to do it. But the... I've lost my train of thought. I was about to say something that completely popped.
Well, we're talking about cost and whether it would be worthwhile them.
Oh, no, I know what it was. It was on their fact page. They were talking about, well, here's these other options. And they've listed up, you can do your Firefox sync, you can do your Google browser sync. IE's got some options. And then they put up like MobileMe, £80. All the other ones are free. MobileMe, £80. And you can go in, or $80 or whatever, and you can go and do that. But none of them are cross-browser. You know, so you're still having to keep everything.
If you use Firefox across all your things, you're all right. If you use Chrome across all your...
Yeah, but I don't think that's going to happen for me. In fact, the closest it's going to happen is if I ditch Safari at home and use Chrome, because I use Chrome at work, Chrome here. And I guess it'd be one of these things I could get by, but there's reasons why I like having both browsers. And at work, I would then just have a separate IE and keep all my work stuff in there.
What makes me query their kind of motives on this, certainly the 90 days one thing, but also why wouldn't you try and monetize it if that's what you need? Why wouldn't you at least...
Last throw of the dice.
Big deal probably to have, you know, once you've got that kind of infrastructure already going and operating, and you've already said you're going to keep running it for the next 90 days,
yep.
Why not at least try and do...
A bit I don't understand. So why didn't they turn around and say, you know, like, it's a last throw of the dice, you know... £10 a year, £1 a month, whatever, do something and at least give it a go. It just seems like throwing the towel. And they have changed their platform over the last year. I mean, they have added in, you know, like looking at your, you know, trying to look at what you're bookmarking and then turn it into a search engine. And it was a fairly honest post if you read it, and I'll link in the show notes. I mean, the owner's basically saying they tried a number of things, but they never had a big enough market share to make it a platform for advertisers or search industry to be interested. And I just wonder if that's where it's fell down with Google. They've just looked at it and thought, 2 million users, we're not going to get anything out of this.
But 2 million users for a company probably the size of Xmarks and who's involved with it. 2 million users, try it out, £10 a year.
I know.
That's a lot of money sloshing around it. And I know you're not going to get everyone signing up.
But even if you got... I don't know, 10,000 users?
I don't know what the infrastructure costs are, but you can get a lot of infrastructure for a lot less than £2 million.
Something just doesn't add up about it.
I think they're pushing to get someone to sign on the dotted line, and that's why they've said...
Maybe.
You know, a bit like the Beano. Do you remember then that they said they were going to shut down the Beano?
No.
Okay, so it was a while back.
Tell me, goats with sex and the Beano, all in one podcast. What more could you want? I can't get goats with sex off my mind, actually. Goats with sex with goats.
But just don't download it.
Can I had a little skirt around this one and try to find alternatives, and there's not many, because there's not much else does this. There is a tool called LastPass. Me and Shaq have mentioned 1Password before and how we use that to share or store our passwords on the Mac platform. LastPass is sharing or is storing passwords across multiple browsers. And if you look at its features roadmap, which I'll link in the show notes, one of the features was at one point we will look at bookmark sharing and that whole sharing across everything. And on, I think it was on Lifehacker this morning, so one of the comments was that somebody emailed the one of the guys at LastPass, and he had replied with we can't believe this either. We're going to reach out to Xmarks to see what we can do, if there's something that we can do. And it also will probably change the prioritization and what they're developing next. So I think there's maybe in there, they're doing a free option, or you can do a paid option with more features, and it's like $1 a month. And you're thinking, for something like passwords and bookmark syncing, that's something I'm quite happy to pay for.
Yep.
Another option was a site called, I think it's Digo or Digo, or I don't know how you pronounce these things. Crazy website.
Digo, yeah.
Digo. They do bookmarking plus a whole load more. It was almost like a bit of bookmarking, and it's how you would actually, it's almost like grabbing content. There's a bit of Evernote mixed in there as well. So that's a potential other option as well.
Nothing quite as focused though, is it?
No, and Xmarks starts off with Firefox only, and then it grew and grew and grew. You know, so it was Firefox only, and then at first it was only, I think, on XP, and then it was on Windows, and then it was on Windows and Mac, and then it was different versions, and then it started to spread out onto, well, we'll now support IE, and we'll now support Safari, and we'll now support Chrome.
Well, all the plugins help them get across all the things anyway. I guess the Delicious still does a similar thing as well, doesn't it? And they've got plugins across most browsers.
Yeah, but I don't know. I feel I mean, Delicious got very unfocused. AOL bought them, didn't they? And it just didn't really go anywhere for ages.
I haven't even used a cross-browser bookmarker for a while now. So, I mean, I did start using it, and then I just sort of almost forgot to keep it up to date.
There's a name, Pinboard, has just sprung into my mind.
Didn't they, inside the Xmarks blog posting about them shutting, they've pointed you in the direction of quite a few different alternatives, haven't they?
Yeah, there you go. Pinboard it started up last year, and I've just pulled up a TechCrunch post, and it was back to basics. Ditch Delicious, use Pinboard. And I think it increases in price the more people join. They'll get some crazy pricing where it's like, you know, if you joined at first, it was $1. Now if you join, it's like $4. You know, as more people join, it just goes slightly up.
That's a little bit rubbish from my point of view.
Well, yeah, but I think it was the developer was up front and said, I can't do this for free, you know, but I can, this is how I want to structure my costs. And just while I mentioned TechCrunch, AOL just bought them.
Okay.
Great.
So now this next item has been covered by podcasts worldwide, and all of them have been very solemn because the owner...
And I'm going to laugh, is that what you're going to say?
The owner of... No, I'm not going to laugh. I'm going to keep this nice and solemn, which is the owner of the Segway, basically Empire, has died tragically by driving, apparently, his Segway off of a cliff, his cross-country Segway, into a ravine, I guess, and didn't survive it. Now, it has been very solemn, and everyone has been, you know, talking it down. It's probably a bit too close to start making the jokes, but there is something a little bit funny about it. Is there? I'm on my own.
Yeah.
I'll leave that to the listeners to decide.
It's a shame.
I'm a bad man.
And the guy's an ex-miner. You know, and he's seemingly very well respected and very, very well regarded. But to him and George Bush.
He was out on his estate, segueing around.
I was even going to make some sort of pun about, no, he was a next segue into, but it never happened.
You're a bad man as well. Anyway, very sad news. It is sad news.
It is. No, it's tragic. As tragic as Xmarks, if I've got to be honest. There's a bit more caught up about that this morning than I was about him.
Let's move on to the picks for this week. And if I could quickly cover mine first, I'm going to talk about a application or a service called Toggle, TOGGL. Now, I've been not forced to use, but I've been made to use. I don't know what the word is. No, I have to use it for a company that I'm working for currently. Now, Toggle is a time management service. They've got a website where you log in and you can add clients, projects, and tasks. And basically, you just log time against them. Now, you know, lawyers use that kind of thing all the time where, you know, they just add time onto a project each time that they're working on it. Now, obviously, being a web service, it's really easy to just keep that going in a window. And as you swap tasks through the day, just keep logging time against different projects. Now, I've been thinking about using something like this for a while for my own business. And this has sort of fitted my needs, really. It has a free option, which is relatively basic, but still lets you do the key bits that you want to do. And it basically lets you assess how you're using your days and where you're basically undercharging, for example, on projects where you underquote how long it's going to take and where you're making more money, where your most productive times a day are and things like that. There's pro options which come in lots of different guises, but pretty much are for either individual users or teams, and they come in, I think it's from about $5 a month or something like that, and then going on up from there. But it's a great little tool, does what it does, you know, what you want it to do. Has mobile apps as well on all the main handsets, so you can even log time when you're away from your desk. It's a good little service.
Fantastic.
So what is your pick this week?
So this is just a very quick one. Google. So we talked about how they've bought 23 new companies this year. And also the rate of change of their products is just amazing. You know, just constantly innovating, constantly throwing out new things. They've actually got over 100 blogs, which is kind of
mad, isn't it?
Yeah. So they've actually there's a website now called Google New, not Google News, which is google.com/newproducts. And this was a 20% project that a few of the Googlers put together just to try and show more what the company is doing. And it's just a great way of actually seeing that they've got a like, kind of headline, here's our big announcement over the last, I guess, X weeks. And then underneath, it's just here's all the updates of what we're doing. And it's a great place just to keep an eye on what they're rolling out. Even, you know, from the...
nicely displayed as well, isn't it?
Yeah, from big things, you know, like obviously the Google search changes a couple of weeks back to even, you know, just small changes within Google Docs. You know, they're using some web fonts and some bits that might just, you might have missed, but they're now there. So quite a handy little site to keep an eye on.
Indeedy. And that, dear listeners, is our podcast for this week. Didn't quite keep it within the hour, sorry about that. But if you want to find out more about us, we are digitaloutbox.com. You can email us, info@digitaloutbox.com, and we are on Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. Ian, where can we find about you?
My blog is iand.net. I am on Twitter as Shweeper, and within the next week I'll probably do my 3,000th tweet. Fantastic. Wee.
Look out for that one.
I'll be emotional.
I am on Twitter as GZUK. I've probably made about 10 posts now, something exciting like that. And thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Oh, bye.
Wow, it was about what you said then.
What I know?
The time wise.
Yeah, yeah. I'm even, plus now I've just put out a fact about ACS law.
Right.
Details,
yes,
of
your data has gone.
Yep, details of approximately 300 customers were contained in the emails that were leaked. A further 400 customers may have been affected, i.e. we don't know if somebody's leaked that one yet.
Maybe that one hasn't made it out yet, but we know we said
it. Are PlusNet in breach of data protection laws? No. Third parties can apply to the court for what's known as Norwich Pharmacal Order, or NPO. It's a legal procedure intended to assist in the identification of an alleged wrongdoer. When such an order is made, we're obliged to disclose information specified in that order. The personal information that was leaked to the internet was taken from ASI's web servers, which are entirely outside of their control. But you sent it unprotected. You sent it in an Excel file with no protection. Cock. Was PlusNet to blame for leaking the information? No. You were. Send it protecting me. And this is what I don't understand. Why didn't they send it in some sort of encrypted file?
They probably emailed the password.
Yeah, it's just like, well, one, there was one comment on Tauntfeet this morning that says that the password was in another email because they're using a fax to email service. So all they had to do was go and look, troll through the emails, and you'll find the password. And I don't know if it's true or not because you're relying on reading a comment. So you have no idea whether it's just somebody making it up to be worse than it is, but